Hey, listeners, welcome to Everyday Badass. My name is Megan Lahan, and I'm so excited to have you join us and listen to another one of our incredible guests. So let's meet someone interesting. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of Everyday Badass. I am excited to introduce you to Miss Colleen Elridge, who is known as Coach Colleen. She is a coach in so many ways, and I'm so excited to dive into all the things for you guys to learn. And she is joining us via Zoom from Lexington, Kentucky, right?
Yes.
So welcome, Colleen.
Thanks, Megan. Thank you for saying my name right, too. So most people don't say either the first or the last name right, and you nailed both of them.
Yay!
So
thank you. We're starting off on a great way. Yes. Okay. Well, you know, before we get into all the coaching stuff, because I'm kind of fascinated by that. And I think that, you know, there's so many people that in every facet of their job that they're a coach in some capacity and they have the ability to be a coach in some capacity, some more so than others, especially with, you know, multiple direct reports or what have you. But Colleen coaches on so many levels. I mean, you know, from, you know, being in a workplace environment to people who want to do something personally in their life, maybe something they want to start, maybe something that they're struggling with. You know, she has the life coach part of it in addition to the work. I loved one of your seminars that you were talking about, New Kid on the Block. If you're new kid and in the workplace environment, she does an amazing workshop called Empower. I want her to get into that. So there's a lot of things to unpack, but I think what's also very interesting is when people go down this path, you really worked in HR and this, you know, quote unquote, normal, you know, linear path of work career before you chose to take this leap. So why don't we talk about that first? Maybe give us just a little upbringing of Colleen, you know, kind of, I know you went to Transylvania, just kind of all those things. And then what kind of how, what led you to here?
Yeah. So a couple of, I'll try to do like the truncated version of my life story.
Yes.
So I was actually born in California, and I honestly think living in a place like California and then moving to Texas and then moving to Kentucky has impacted how I view the world significantly because I have all of these different lenses that I see things through, right? Mm-hmm. And so when my family was living in California, my dad was a stockbroker. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. And then my father passed away. Mm. And that truly impacted the rest of my life.
I bet.
It changed the trajectory of how probably my mom viewed our lives to go, but also just what my life could look like. Mm-hmm. And so I was raised by a single mom from the age of 4 on. And that changed a lot of things. It made me see the world in a very different light, not good or bad, just very different. And I experienced loss at a very young age. And I think that also gave me this sense of how can I help other people feel better about themselves? How can I help other people feel like they're not alone? And I really, for a long time, honestly, until I was 30, struggled with this idea of like my father passing away, and my father passed away from suicide, which adds a whole other layer of complexity
Absolutely.
To it. And I just, until I was 30, I was like mad at the world and mad at like the circumstances that I was like living in and mad that why me? And I would go to things like weddings and see these father-daughter dances and honestly would have to like walk out of the room because I was just angry about it.
Yeah.
And so at 30, I started this kind of path to healing that relationship with my father, which changed a lot of things internally and externally. But I will tell you, it gave me this sense of empathy that all of us have something. Mm-hmm. All of us are working through something. All of us just want to know that we're seen and that we are understood and that we are supported. And so a lot of the work that I do, I feel tapped into that. And it's interesting because I was doing that work before I knew what that work was, right?
Yes, so, yes.
And I think a lot of it was just because of the way that my life transpired up until that point. So so that was a huge impact. And then I went to Transylvania for undergrad, mm-hmm. loved it, still love it. I'm on the Board of Regents there now. I still try to go back as often as possible. And it was another big transition in my life. And one of the things that I learned while I was at Transy was I got a D my first semester in college.
Yeah.
Like as a final grade, a D. And I was a straight A student growing up and a bit of a perfectionist and, you know, had like ulcers from like trying to be a perfectionist.
Be all the things, do everything
be all
right.
The things yes. to everyone. And like, I can't mess up. I mean, I got something in high school called a Commonwealth diploma, which was you took all of these AP classes and you had to take all the AP exams. I was the only person in my class that did that. Why?
Holy cow. Right.
Because I was like, oh, I want to. That would be fun. Right.
Fun for Colleen, not for everybody else.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it really well. And so that led to like some health issues. But I will tell you, the D my freshman year of college opened me up to the possibilities of life outside of perfection, because my thought process was, if I am not perfect, the world stops turning.
Yes.
And legitimately, who am I if I am not the straight A student, if I am not the girl who does everything right? Who am I? Mm-hmm. And I just remember seeing that final grade and honestly, like, shocked that the world was still going on. Like,
right.
The sun was still shining. People were still walking by. And I was just like, what is happening? You know?
I thought it would implode. Everything
exactly.
would be done.
Exactly.
Right. And my so life would be over.
Yeah. And it gave me this permission to kind of let go of being the perfect person. And it's still something that I actively have to work on.
I bet.
But that is where I truly did start to just be like, oh, I can just be Colleen and that's enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, any of the college students that might listen to this, I'm not saying like get a D and flunk out. I'm saying it is okay, because sometimes you really do try your hardest and you still are not going to get the level of success that you think that you should have, right?
Yes.
And it was just such an important lesson for me to... And it set the pathway for so many other things in my life, because I got that D in chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was going to be a biology major. I thought I was going to study genetics. I was really interested in that. And then I got this D in chemistry, and I thought, well, maybe this isn't it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right. Like, or if you have to work
it could be.
That
yeah.
hard at something to still get a D, it just may be that it's not the level of interest, or it's a different interest than in that specific thing.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I ended up in this anthropology class at the same time and got an A in that and thought it was super fascinating. I'd never heard of anthropology until I went to college, and I was taking it just as like a gen ed class.
Yep.
And loved it. And I remember going to the professor and saying, hey, I'm really interested in this. I think I want to major in this. And there wasn't a major for it at the time.
Mm.
And she said, oh, well, there's not a major. And I said, well, could I make one up? Like, I was 17. I was like, can't we just make one up? And she was like, I mean, you could, but this is what that would require. And I was like, all right, cool, let's do it. And so we literally built the major. And I went with her in front of the Board of Trustees at 17 years old to pitch this idea of starting a new major at Transylvania. And they approved it. And now it's a full-time major.
Love
and it. So I was the very first anthropology major at Transy. So I always feel like I like to leave just a little piece of me wherever I go. So the anthropology major is it. My senior year, I did an internship in state government with the personnel cabinet, which is like the HR branch of state government.
Yes.
they selected me because of the anthropology major. And the guy who was the cabinet secretary at the time was also a transit grad. He thought it was interesting that I majored in anthropology. And he said, we're going to open up this new diversity and EEO office. I think it'd be a great fit for you. Would you come and intern here? And I was like, yeah, sure. And then a month before graduation, they offered me a full-time job in the training office, which was also like when I think through how I ended up to where I'm at, that was like such a God move. Like I'm a very spiritual person.
Yeah.
That was like very much like, oh, hey, you need to be here to learn these skills. So they offered me a full-time job in the training office, something that I did not know people could do. Like you could get paid to talk for a living. Like,
right.
Sign me up, right?
Yeah.
And so I got to learn all of these skills of like, how do you develop curriculum and how do you develop a training and what do adults need for learning versus kids and learning, and got to practice and be bad at it and then get better at it. And then 2 years later, I moved over to the EEO and diversity office again, mm-hmm. and wrote policies for state government on how do we create more diverse and inclusive workforces. I created curriculum on how do we prevent harassment in the workplace, and stayed there for a long time and got certified to be an investigator, and really just felt like I was doing such great work, mm-hmm. impacting all of state government. And at the time there were like 30,000 state employees. And I was like, this is it. Like the things that I'm doing is impacting all of these other people and mm-hmm. helping to improve their workplaces, and loved that. And got asked to take over a leadership development program for state government. And that clicked for me. And I was like, sure, yeah, let me redo the whole thing and make it better. And did 6 months of research, 6 months of implementation for this 2-year program. And the very first year that we had graduates from that program, 85% of them got promotions by the time that they graduated.
Wow.
And so I was like, there is something here. And yes. it was very holistic program. So there were workshops and there was mentoring and there was coaching. And I was like, man, there's something here and I really like this.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how all of this goes together, right? Like I like the diversity piece. I like the coaching piece. I like the leadership development piece. Just not sure how it all goes together. And then I got asked to speak at a conference, and there was a guy from Walgreens there who saw me speak and said, hey, can you come in and do that same workshop for us at Walgreens for our regional meeting? And I was like, yeah, no, I don't really do that. Like, I didn't know that was a thing, right?
Right.
I don't really do that. And 2 weeks later, he called me back and he was like, no, we really want you, and here's what we'll pay you. And it was a third of my yearly salary to go in and do 2 days of training. And I was like, what? And this was like, again, another God moment, because
yes.
I truly feel like
it was showing you.
He saw a value in me that I couldn't see in myself with the skill set.
Mm-hmm.
And a skill set that I did not think was that valuable to other people, because it's something that comes supernaturally to me. And it's fun for me. And so I was just kind of like, why would anyone pay me to go and do that? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And it opened my eyes to a possibility. And truly, that conference changed everything, because the guy from Walgreens came. And then like 6 months later, there was another group that was at that conference that reached out to me. And it just was like, maybe I could do this.
Yeah.
And it took another 2 years to really think, okay, like, let me get serious about doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And it just grew and developed from there. And so that was not a very short version, but that was,
it's all valid. It all needs to be told and shared. So it doesn't matter if it's short or not. So, you know, I love it because, you know, I love it for a lot of reasons, but you know, one of the things, two things that are really kind of sticking out to me is, you know, there's never just this this plan that we thought was going to happen, right? Like, I think that's always where people create these roadblocks for themselves is when they have this, you know, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do it by this age, and this is what's going to happen. And before you know it, they look at things as more of this wrench that's thrown in their life instead of being like, but it may be the opportunity that you need, or, you know, embrace that and be open to these things. Because if you're not, you know, you miss a lot of incredible things that are put on your path that really could allow you to do something or hone your skills more or serve in a different capacity or, you know, light up something inside of you that you can give to other people, which is really incredible. So, you know, I love that. And I love your ability to be open to that, to see those things and be mindful of the fact that, you know, they are being put on your path for a reason and, you know, being willing to embrace it. And even though, you know, like you said, you were two more years in that workplace, you know, of just still trying to say, hey, I've got this, you know, to me, they're kind of like God whispers. It's like, I've got this thing in my belly, in my heart that's telling me you could maybe do this or what does this look like? And, you know, there's still, it's still okay to build the foundation and make sure you feel like you're ready to take that leap of faith. But, you know, looking for all of those things, which is pretty incredible. So,
you know, Megan, one of the things that I always tell people all the time, people reach out to me and say, I'm thinking about leaving my job. This is what I really am passionate about. What would you do? And I am not a big leap of faith person.
Yeah.
Like, truly, that is not how I'm wired. And so I always say, when I left, it was not a leap of faith. It was very much like the most practical next step, right? It was a walk of faith, not a leap of faith, because I had done all the work to get to that point where I knew this was the right next step to take, right? Because I didn't want to go into working for myself with this sense of like desperation or thirstiness, you know, that like, that was not the energy that I wanted to go into this work with.
Absolutely.
And so by the time that I left, I had 6 months salary saved. Mm-hmm. So I was like, if I don't get another gig for 6 months, cool. Right. I know I can make this work. I knew that wasn't going to be the case just because of how things were working at the time. But if for some reason it was, I wasn't like, what am I going to do? How am I going to make money? And I had a plan. I knew exactly what I wanted the next 6 months to look like in order to continue this work.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not a big fan of the people that are just like, I didn't know how I was going to make it work. I just did it. I'm like, why would you do that to yourself?
Yeah, same. I 100% agree. I think it's like, you know, you build the foundation, you have the faith of what you're doing. You know, when you eventually make that decision, I think a lot of people feel like it's this leap, but there's definitely a difference between a blind leap and then going in with an actual, you know, plan, which, you know, is still just, you know, you're pivoting of where you are, but, you know, you've put in the work to get there. So let's talk about that, the coaching. So you decide then, you know, to launch this and you're going to work for yourself. So, you know, what did that look like for you from a vision for the first 6 months or a year? What were you really thinking it was going to be versus kind of where it is today?
Yeah. So I think originally, so one of the things to clarify, most of my business, not most, right now it's most, but it varies by like quarter to quarter.
Yeah.
Part of my business is very much this corporate. I still do corporate training. I still do corporate consulting. I still do a lot of work on in the HR departments for other organizations.
Yeah.
And then the other piece of it is this coaching piece. And so I really thought when I decided I was going to do this business, I really thought it was going to be mostly coaching, sprinkled in with a little bit of the corporate work because like I just have a good skill set for that.
Mm-hmm.
What's been so interesting to me is there are times in the business where it's 50-50. I would say right now it's 80% corporate, but that's because we're moving towards the end of the year and a lot of companies are just like, hey, we need you to come in and do blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And so about 20% coaching right now. I think I didn't realize when I first started how flexible it could all be. I really just kind of had this vision of, I just want to coach all day. And I loved the idea of sitting down, helping people see the potential in themselves. Mm-hmm. And then how do we help you maximize that potential and have you find success, but also have you find fulfillment yes. within that success, right?
Because yes.
there's a lot of people that are checking all the boxes and are not happy.
Agreed.
And they still feel like something's missing. And it's because sometimes the routes that they go to get that success are not the best routes or the healthiest routes. And then sometimes it's like, oh, that wasn't really what I wanted to begin with. Like what I really wanted was to feel a certain way. Mm-hmm. So how do we tap into what does success actually look like for you individually? Not like your mom or your husband or your wife or whoever. What yes. does it look like for you? And why is it that you want that one thing? Mm-hmm. And what is it going to make you feel like when you get it? And then saying, here's the game plan on how we're going to get there, right? Because oftentimes people know what they want or they think they know what they want. They just can't see the pathway of how to actually get from where they're at now to what it is that they want.
Yep.
So that piece of it has always been super fun for me. It's like putting together puzzles. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm working on like, you know, 10 puzzles at the same time with different people, which is fun. The consulting piece, I think, has been the biggest surprise for me, how much I still love doing that and how much fulfillment I get from that. And I think it's because I was an investigator of harassment discrimination complaints during that time that yeah. I was working in state government. And I got to see people at like their absolute worst. Mm-hmm. And when they were feeling their worst, and when it was like, you know, when someone comes to me and says, I think I'm the victim of, you know, sexual harassment, that is like the worst moment for someone, right?
Absolutely.
And I always just thought, one, how can I do more to prevent this from happening? Mm-hmm. And then two, what can I do to make sure that it doesn't happen again? And what can I do to make sure that this victim feels seen and heard and understood and validated in their concerns?
Yes.
And a lot of the work that I do with corporations is really how do we develop better, more inclusive cultures where this just can't happen. Mm-hmm. Like it just can't happen because people won't let it happen. And so I really feel like the work that I get to do in companies, one of my big values is impact, has such a bigger, broader impact than I ever thought I was going to be able to have, right? Like wow. In government, it was like there's 30,000 employees. But then when you work with a company like Toyota, you're like, oh, wait, this work is going to have bigger, broader impact, yes. right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And for me, it's like we spend so much time at work. How can I help people make their workplaces better? That way people enjoy coming to work and the ripple effects that it has through each individual's lives when they go home and they're happy with the job that they have, they're happy with the companies they work for, mm-hmm. they're not taking that into work or into their home life, which is then impacting their ability to show up fully at home.
Yes.
So I love that I get to do that. And it's such a bigger thing to me than just like, I'm just going to go in and teach a workshop. It truly is. This workshop is going to give people the skills to improve their workplaces, which is then going to improve their livelihood. So I just love that I get to do it.
I love that. You know, I think that there's so many people who get stuck in the rat race for sure. I think that there's a lot of people that, yes, while you are here to provide, you know, for yourself, for your family, whatever the situation may be, you know, you still at the end of the day, everybody has a choice in where they choose to work. You do mm-hmm. have that choice. And we see these people at work more than we see our family most of the yeah. time, you know, take out this past 18 months and, you know, right. working from home and all that stuff. But for the most part, you know, you generally are spending more time with those people than you are at home. And so to know that if you continue to be in a situation that really is not serving you well, which then in turn has you not bringing your best self home is, it's just so sad. It's so heartbreaking. And I think that there's yeah. a lot of people who get stuck in that and feel, well, it's too hard to make that change or, you know, that whole thing of getting, go through the hard to get to the good, you know, whether that's staying in your current environment and having difficult conversations to get to a better environment, or maybe make a change, you know, if that's where you feel like you need to be. And so I love that you, gosh, what a commendable and enjoyable job that you get to do to really help people, you know, learn those skills and figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and also recognizing that when you are in it, you often can't see it, right?
Absolutely.
It's like we can't see our own blind spots. Organizations can't see their own blind spots. And part of what I think that I get to do is go in and say, oh, do you see this over here?
Like, right. Right.
Do you see what might be happening over here? And like, let's work on fixing that, because I think if we can fix that, then we can get to a better place as an organization. Mm-hmm. So it's just a fun thing to do. And I often joke, like, those anthropology skills of just observation and understanding cultural dynamics really has helped me in the workplaces to just observe and see, and see beyond what's being said too, right? Like, there are so many pieces and aspects of culture beyond just what
verbal.
A company tells you their culture is.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
You got to go in and see for yourself, and then you can see it a little differently because I'm not in it to mm-hmm. see it.
Well, I'm so glad you said that because, and I apologize, I didn't tell the listener. So I came across Colleen and her kick-ass coaching from, we have a mutual friend. It's her bestie, but it's a gentleman named Keith who I worked with years ago. And talk about a bestie though, because he just promotes you like crazy and he loves you and supports you like crazy. And that's how I came to see your stuff and came across your content and just started following and watching. And I subscribe to your weekly, you know, emails that you send out, and I read those. And so that's how all of this came about. And I was just like, we absolutely have to have her on because she's this badass chick who has, you know, an awesome story to share. And this is what she does. But I was so curious in a good way, but just the anthropology background, because, you know, you go from that, and it's something I'm not well versed in. You know, for me, my background was psychology, but it's parallel in the sense that I use that in business all the time without a shadow of a doubt, and with teams and team development and leadership and, you know, all the things. But I'm so glad you touched on that, because I was like, how do you apply anthropology to what you do today? So
I
love that.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny because people are like, anthropology, that's so interesting. And I think when they think anthropology, they automatically go to archaeology.
They do,
and
yes.
I often say, I learned very quickly, I am not an archaeologist. I don't like the heat. I don't like dirt. I don't like the sweat. And I did a couple of field schools in archaeology, and I was like, this is not me. Like,
right.
This is not how I want to spend my life, because I would be like a two-season archaeologist. Because if it's too cold, I don't want to be out. If it's too hot, I don't want to be out.
Yes.
And so anthropology is archaeology, but it's also linguistics is the subfield of anthropology, and cultural anthropology, which is just the study of culture, is also a subfield of anthropology. And so I really looked more in the cultural anthropology part of it. I went to Italy when I was in college and studied Italian culture and how the changing role of women in Italian culture was impacting the entire culture.
Wow.
And that was really interesting. And so I really just became fascinated by people's stories and how those stories impacted how they show up and how they were raised. And I remember when I was in Italy, I did this cooking class in like this woman's basement. She was like someone's Italian grandma, basically. And she was like, come, I'll teach you how to make my ravioli, you know? And it was not even about the ravioli. It was like the stories that she was telling while she was making the ravioli that made everything make much more sense. Like everything you were seeing, and like why her husband of 60 years has never cooked a meal for himself. It's like, oh, okay, I can understand how we got here. Like how this has happened, right?
Yeah.
And I think when you are trained to like hear these stories and understand like the subtext of them, it gives you better clarity of like, oh, okay, well, this makes sense. Like it may not be my way, but it makes sense.
Yes. Yes. And then you can either, you know, learn from it, or it can be just incredibly interesting, or it's something about, you know, it can change the way you view something, or, you know, maybe you've harbored a certain thought process and it impacts that. So let's get into some of your conferences, because, you know, certainly I know Empower is, and am I saying that right? Because I know it's emphasis on her, but.
Yeah. Empower her.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, so we'll get into that, but I know that your premise, of your website and things that you pursue is Be More, which I love that. I love that thought process, and just, you know, there's always an opportunity for people to be more, develop more, you know, raise the bar, learn more about themselves, just so many things. And, you know, let's get into that. And then your conference that you launched a couple years ago.
Yeah. So Be More really came about because I was like, I'm tired of feeling like I always need to do more things or learn more things or add more things. Like, what I really need to do is just be more of who I'm supposed to be and who I'm capable of being.
Yes.
And so that is really the premise of why I named my business Be More. Mm-hmm. It's Be More Consulting. And I feel like it applies both individually and as an organization. How can organizations be more of the organization that they started to be, right? It's like no one started off to be dysfunctional, and yet sometimes they find themselves there.
Sure.
So what is it that we need to do in order to be more of who it is that you wanted to be? And I got to tell you, like, a goosebump story. So when I named my business, I had gone kind of back and forth about, like, is this what I really need to do? Like, start this business? Like, I knew I wasn't going to do it full time yet. It was bringing in some extra money. And I was like, is this really what I need to do? And I'm having this conversation with my brother about it. And he's like, yeah, like, it makes total sense to me. I mean, you always said you wanted to be the next Oprah. And he's like, I really think you meant that you wanted to give people tools to live better lives. And that is what you do. And I was like, oh yeah, like, you're right. That is what I do. And that next day, I'm like driving somewhere and I look over and there is a swarm of bees, like crazy swarm of bees. And I'm like, that has to be a sign. Like, that's not something you see all the time. That has to be a sign. So when I got to where I was going, I Googled, like, what do bees stand for? And bees are, they kind of signify, exceeding the expectation. Because bees aren't supposed to be able to fly because of the weight of their bodies and their wingspans.
Yeah.
And yet they do. It's like no one told the bees that they couldn't fly, so they fly, right? And I thought, gosh, that is such a beautiful way of saying, like, exactly what I want people to feel. Like, exceed the expectation for yourself,
for
or
yourself.
The expectation of others. And I feel like I've spent a lot of my life exceeding expectations, especially growing up as a Black female raised by a single mom.
Yeah.
It's like the statistics about what my life should have been and is not, you know, I felt like I've worked so hard to exceed a lot of those expectations too. So it felt very in alignment with who I am and what I wanted to do with this business. So that's how we got Be More.
Yeah.
And that is why you'll see bees on a lot of the things that I do too, just as kind of that reminder to me, like, this is why we're doing this.
Yes.
Like, this is it, you know?
Well, it's your foundation.
Yeah, exactly. So then 3 years ago, I started this conference, and it came about because I get asked to speak at a lot of conferences, and I love speaking at conferences. It's super fun for me. I often joke, it's more fun to speak at a conference than put on a conference. It's like, you don't have to worry about anything else that's happening. You just kind of have to show up.
So, yes.
I've always really enjoyed speaking at conferences. And a few years ago, I got asked to speak at a women's conference. And I'm on the phone with the organizers, and I said, you know, since this is a conference for women, like, here are some ideas on topics. And they were like, well, we were thinking it'd be great if you could just teach a workshop on generational differences in the workplace, which is something that I do on the corporate side. So I was like, oh, I mean, like, I could do that, but right. I could do that for anyone, you know? And if this is all women, why wouldn't we be talking specifically about women's issues? And they were like, yeah, no, but we just want you to talk about generational differences. And I was like, all right, cool. So I did that. And I just, like, had this gut feeling of, like, this is not what women want to talk about.
Missed opportunity.
Like, yeah, I was like, it's not that they don't care about generational differences, but this is not what they want to talk about.
Right.
And so I didn't know where it was going to lead, but I ended up, like, reaching out to about 50 women. And I said, what's your biggest leadership struggle right now? Mm-hmm. And I just listened. Like, I was just really interested, like, for women, what would be the difference between, like, your struggle in a management or leadership position versus just generalized struggles in management and leadership? And the number one thing that I heard from women was, how do I communicate effectively without feeling like a bitch?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, there's something here. Like, we need to be talking about this, because if so many women are telling me some variation of that, this is why women aren't speaking up.
Yes.
This is why women aren't raising their hands. This is why women are so scared to say something, because they're so worried about being perceived one way when really they're just being assertive and saying what might be the truth, right?
Right.
And so I was like, I want to talk about that. And then I looked at some of the other things that they were saying, and part of it was like, I'm just exhausted all the time, that I feel like by the time the weekend comes, I'd have nothing to give my family or myself. And so I was like, okay, well, we need to talk about self-care, but in a very practical way.
Yes.
Because no one has 2 hours to sit in a bathtub, right? And so what actually is self-care for a real woman on a Tuesday? Like, what does that look like, right? And how can we make it personal to you? So it's not, here's what Colleen does for self-care, do that. It's, here's what Megan really needs to fill her cup up.
Mm-hmm.
And here's how she's going to do it. And you might do it at 10 o'clock in the morning, but I might do it at 7 o'clock at night, right?
Absolutely. So
a good fit for you. It has to be something that you will actually do, that you will want to do, that you will make the time to do. And then it becomes a thing that is a habit that you just do, and you don't have to think about it. And so I started just, like, creating this content, like, okay, this is what I think women really, really want. And this was very much like a scary moment for me, because I had done workshops before on my own. And it would be like 10 people. Like, I love to do small workshops. So I would be like, hey, this Sunday, we're going to do this workshop at this location. And it was no big deal if it sold out, if it didn't sell out. It wasn't that big of a deal, because it wasn't that much of an investment. I knew for this conference, it was going to be a big investment. Mm-hmm. I knew I wanted to hire an event planner. I knew I wanted to do it right. But I also didn't just want it to look like what I saw everyone else doing, right? I knew I didn't want to show up at a conference where people are wearing pantsuits and where it's almost like a who looks the most sophisticated. Like, I didn't want any of that. I was like, no, I want this to feel like brunch with your girlfriends, but with a purpose, right?
Yes.
And I want it to be fun, because I know that when your energy is high, you're going to retain a lot more of that information. So, like, how can we create this fun, inclusive, very caring, community-centered environment for one day? And how do I talk to women about this? Like, this is something that they need to be at, not just like it'd be fun to go, right?
Yes.
And how can I then translate that to organizations? That way they sponsor their women to come to this as well. So we talked about communication skills. We talked about negotiation. We talked about self-care. We talked about energy management versus time management, because I feel like there's so much of an emphasis on what do you do in the hour instead of what hours do you feel like you have the highest level of energy, and how can you create a more intentional schedule within those hours.
Yes.
And absolutely. Just teaching people that, right? Like things that to me, I had to learn. And so now they feel very second nature, but I know a lot of women just don't know. And so I was like, let's do it. Like, we're going to do this. And I remember having some doubt about it. And anytime in business, especially when I have doubt, I get woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning with answers. And it will be like repeatedly with answers. When I was writing my first book, I remember just getting woken up and it was like, Monday morning pep talks is your first book. And I was like, no. Like, of yeah. course it's not. Like, why would anyone want to buy a book of emails that I've sent out? Like, no. And it was like for 2 weeks, every morning at like 3:30, I would wake up and I would hear this voice. It's like, Monday morning pep talks is your first book, right?
Yes.
And I always end up in this compromise with God where I'm like, okay, God, well, if the website is still available, then that's my sign that this is what I need to do.
Right.
And then lo and behold, like the website would be available. Same thing with the conference. And so I'm like, should I be doing this? Because this is real expensive. And I remember having a conversation with my husband, like, if this doesn't work, like, it's gonna cost some money. And he's like, okay, well, if you think this is the right move, like, I support you, go for it.
Love it.
Which is great, but then it's on me, right?
Totally.
Then I'm like, oh, what if it doesn't
right.
work?
Yeah. I said it was going to work. I said we yeah. should pull the trigger and spend the money. And yes.
Yeah, exactly. And then I had to have like a pep talk with myself. Like, you can't encourage other women to go after these big dreams and goals if you're not willing to do it either.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to change the narrative that I was telling myself. And literally 2 weeks before the tickets went on sale, I remember saying, this is going to sell out. I had no evidence that it was going to sell out, but I was like, this is going to sell out. Mm. Like, I know that we will sell every single ticket to this event. We had 150 tickets. We ended up with 200 women at the event. And it was just amazing. We had a DJ, we had a cake and ice cream break in the afternoon. It was
How
just
fun.
So much fun. It was
yes.
so much fun. And so it was the event that I wanted to attend, which was really important to me because I was like, I'm not seeing this. I'm not seeing this anywhere around here. And I know this is what women want. Mm-hmm. And I know this is what women need. And I've talked to all these women to know this is what they're talking about behind the scenes. This is what they're talking about to their girlfriends. So why don't we just talk about it together and make it a thing? And so the last 2 years it sold out. This year, literally just last week, made the super, super tough decision to not do it
yeah.
this year. For lots of reasons, but one, I knew it still is not the right space to do the event that I know it's capable of being.
Yes.
And I felt like if it's not that, I don't want to take people's money for what it's not, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, integrity is another one of my core values. And so it's like, I don't want to just do it to do it. I want to do it because it's the right thing to do and it can be done the right way.
Yes.
So instead, we're doing this week-long series of hour-long conversations in 1 week called Things We Need to Talk About, which I am super excited about because it's the same premise as the conference, but not a full day, broken up. It gives you kind of information, and then you have the whole rest of your day to kind of simmer in it and apply it. And it's not just a day's worth of information where you're trying to then figure out what am I going to do with all of this information.
Yeah, it's more digestible.
Yeah. So I'm really pumped about that, especially the first 2 days of that. The first day is all about change and transformation.
Mm.
And one of the reasons that I specifically wanted to talk about that this year was what I've seen since COVID is so many women still trying to, you know, fit the square peg in the round hole. They're
yeah.
still trying to make what was working before COVID work the same way while we're in and moving more towards a post-COVID. And it's just not going to work. And then they're frustrated because it's not working the same way. instead of saying, oh, it could never work the same way again. So what is the next iteration of this? What does the next thing look like? And so helping people kind of navigate the change, because even when it's good change, it's still hard. Mm-hmm. So how do we navigate this change a little bit better? And then day two is all about beliefs. So how do we move from the belief that something is impossible to inevitable, right? Like yes. This belief in yourself from I can't do that to of course I can do that. And how does your inner critic impact your ability to shift your beliefs? And so the first 30 minutes of every day is me teaching. And then the last 30 minutes are actual breakout room conversations with other real women about how is this playing out in your own life? What is this looking like for you? And hearing those other stories, finding those similar relationships and recognizing that you're not alone with it, right? Yes. I always want to tell people, like, you're not that special to think that it's just you, and not in a harsh way, yes. right? Like, it's just like, it's not just you that's feeling this. It's you and her and me and all of us, you mm-hmm. know? So just recognizing that you're special, but you're not that special. And so I want us to, like, lift the veil on it and have these conversations, which is how I started this idea of, like, things we need to talk about, because I just felt like we needed to talk about some things.
Well, I love it. And, you know, the one thing, too, when I think about your content for the conference and, you know, through my career, you know, I've gone to a lot of conferences and workshops and things within my business. And the thing that is so disheartening when you go and, you know, one, everybody's time is valuable. So if they're choosing to spend that time, you want there to be takeaways or light bulb moments, right? And I feel like there's so much where we talk about this big, broad topic, but it's talking around it, or it's talking, mm-hmm. there's not really anything tangible. You know, yeah. people, well, there's not going to be the same roadmap to everybody, just to your point about the self-care thing, right? I mean, it's going to be different for everybody, but still, it's like, what are some of those tangible, actionable takeaways that somebody can try out and implement mm-hmm. and say, is this the right thing for me or is it not? Where, you know, I just attended one a few weeks ago, and I was disappointed because I felt like so much of it was about COVID, which I know that that's the world that we live in, right? But I mean, right now, but it was so much about the past. Like, what did you do? How did you respond? All these things. And I'm like, no. We should be talking about where are we now, but where are we moving forward? And what is yes. this future that we see post-COVID? And how do we adapt to where we are today for, you know, mm-hmm. lots of us that didn't think that we would be here 18, 19 months later, right? So how do we deal with it now? And yeah. I think any conference or workshop that you are, you know, being authentic about talking about the things that people are afraid to talk about, you know, inviting that discussion where, you know, more people, more opinions are going to help bring things to light, but then also having these true, here are some action items or tangible takeaways that you can apply or try is just, that's where the value is.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, and for me, it's like, you don't need to know the theory of why this works. You just need to know, like, what do I need to do in order to make it work, right? Yes. And so I feel like so many times people spend so much time at this, like, 10,000 foot view because they're like, I only have an hour. And I'm like, cool. Well, if I only have an hour, I'm not going to just spend an hour telling you the theory because that's not helpful. What's helpful is here's how it's worked for me. Here are the steps that I've taken. Here's what you can try in order to see if it works for you. Yes. And hearing from other people too, yes. right? That way you get that, oh, okay, well, it worked for so-and-so too. And it's not just Colleen.
Yep. I think, you know, I've always given so much credit because it's true that, you know, a lot of things that have helped me along my path is just hearing other people and how their authentic stories, you know, where they fell down, where their successes were, where their aha moments were, you know, what they were willing to say, I'm not good at, you know, how do I get better at, you know, this or mm-hmm. whatever that may be. That's so much of what's impacted me is just one, being open and receptive to hearing other people be honest about their path. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, one of the things real quickly, I feel like I haven't talked enough about how often failure does happen.
Yeah.
And I just want anyone listening to know there are lots of great moments in what I get to do. There are also lots of things that like doesn't stick and doesn't go as well as what I thought and doesn't have the impact that I thought it was going to be. But I will say I could not have sold out a conference of 200 had I not sold a single ticket to an event of 10. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's another thing I don't feel like we talk about enough is like the failures along the way. We just want to focus on the successes. And
agree.
I'm trying to get better at just highlighting, yes, there have been some amazing successes along the way, but there has been so many things that I have failed at too. And have cried about and been frustrated about and couldn't get to work and things that I thought were like brilliant mm-hmm. and no one wanted it. And it was like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
This isn't it. But recognizing that all of that is a part of the process and all of that led me to the successes that I have had as well.
Yes. Well, and the customer will always tell you, right? They'll tell you the good or the bad. They'll tell you what they want, what they don't want. And, you know, the bigger thing is just being able to be open to that feedback or when you have that idea that you think, oh my gosh, this is it. And then find out, not really everybody wants to learn about that or talk about that. You know, it's just, you have to be able to say that, and it may just be something that's shelved for right now. And it's going to be something that's going to come at a later time.
Absolutely. And that's the other thing. There've been many, many things that like didn't work 5 years ago that I've brought pieces out of for something else. And it's worked beautifully there. So
Awesome. Well, before we wrap up, I have a few questions I always ask a lot of guests. So we're going to end with those. And then I definitely want you to tell all of our listeners how to find you and follow you because, you know, whether it's corporate, engagement that they need some help with, whether it's personal, you know, if they want to get on the email, you know, messages that you send out every week. I love your random Wednesday thoughts on social media. I look for it every week. I read them. I love them. I love the random husband purchase and, you know, whatever he's picked up. It always makes me laugh. I love reading that. So we'll end with that. But okay, so for our first question is, what are you most proud of personally? You know, when you think of just where you are today, what are you most proud of personally for Colleen?
Yeah. That's a great question. Two things. One, the journey to forgiveness with my father has been one of the most important things I've ever done. And I'm really, really proud of that because, man, when I think about where I was versus where I am now, it's like a night and day difference. So that's the first one. And the second one, I think, is I was willing to bet on myself. And I often tell people one of the things that I believe about myself to the core is that I can figure anything out.
Mm-hmm.
And I have proven it over and over again. Even when I don't like the process of figuring certain things out, I truly believe that I can always figure something out. And that makes me really proud because I'm willing to do that work to figure it out. And a lot of people just stop.
Yeah. I love that. I agree with that wholeheartedly. And isn't it also something you think about if you had not made that decision to do the work to get to a better place with what you were holding on to with your dad? Think about how your life would have been holding on to all of that anger and how you would have been, you know, I mean, I'm sure a lot of these things wouldn't have manifested in your life, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I will tell you, I didn't even recognize it myself. It was my husband that he had said something one day. We were traveling, we were going through Alabama, which is where my dad happens to be buried at. And he said, oh, did you want to go by there and see your dad's grave? And I had such a visceral reaction. And he was like, what is happening? Like, what is that? And I think seeing his reaction to my reaction was the wake-up call that I needed. Like, this isn't good. This is not good for me.
Yes.
And so it was him recognizing that started the whole journey of, like, forgiveness and doing that work. And it changed our relationship, like my relationship with my husband,
mm-hmm.
but it even changed like my relationship with myself and the story that I tell myself about who I am based off of my father. So definitely game changer.
Oh, wonderful. What is bringing you hope right now?
There are so many good things happening in the world right now, like right this second. There are lots of things that are painful and that are uncomfortable. But I think, you know, even small things like when I go to the grocery store and someone hands someone a cart, I'm like, see, look, like this is what I want to focus a lot of my energy on, is recognizing the spots of good in the world versus like what can feel doom and gloom at times.
Yeah.
And so I try to be super intentional about seeing the good versus only seeing the bad. Mm-hmm. And I think that truly does help me have more hope about things than most people do.
Yeah. Having the active choice to say, I'm going to look for the good and not just focus on the negative. Because there's always going to be both that you can find. Yep. And, you know, I mean, how much more rewarding to find the good than it is to just focus on the negative.
Yes.
Okay, so our next one is, what piece of advice do you feel like you need to hear right now?
One of the pieces that I constantly have to remind myself is like, B plus effort is still good. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's that recovering perfectionist, recovering people pleaser in me, that sometimes I really just want things to be so good because I have such a strong vision for what I think it should be.
Yeah.
And a B plus effort for something can still yield really great results, and being okay with that.
Yes. Love that. You know, there's, I don't know if you've ever read Good to Great. Have you read that book? Yeah. So you know how they talk about the 8, 9s, or 10s of people, right? Yeah. And that's something I have to tell myself too, and talk about a lot as a team, is that, you know, you're not always going to be a 10, you know, but the person who's the 8, 9, or 10, you're never going to be a 5 because that's just not who you are.
Exactly.
But some days you're going to be an 8, and then some days you're going to be a 10. And all of those are still good. And, you know, you bring a great, wonderful self to the day, no matter which role you're in that day, but it's not always going to be, nor is it healthy to always be at the 10 all the time. And it's just not realistic.
Yes. Yeah. And I think it's just so hard for people that really value being good at what they do and doing a good job, like showing up well. Right. And so my definition of well might be different than other people's definition of well. And so recognizing that there's room for both and the in-between.
Yes, yes. All right. And what do you hope your legacy will be? When people think of Colleen, what do you want them to think of, or what do you want that to conjure?
Yeah. I really just want people to have felt loved by me, regardless of if they knew me personally or they just knew the work, that they could see and feel the true like love that I have for you as a person, because we get to share this earth together today. It's my biggest hope that people always feel better once they leave me than they did before they got to me, and not in a I'm super special kind of way, but really I genuinely care about the spirit of people and who they are. And for me, part of how I do that is helping you reach that potential, right? So a lot of people do it in different ways. For me, how it manifests itself for me is like, how can I help you achieve the things that you want to achieve and help you see yourself the way that I can see you, without judgment, without the voice in your head telling you you're not good enough. How? Because I'm not going to judge anything that anyone wants to do. I'm like, well, that's what you want. Go for it. You know? So how can I help you see that that is just as valid? Your ideas, your thoughts are just as valid as anyone else's, and it only has to make sense to you. But truly, it's that sense of love that I have for people in general. I hope that that's my biggest legacy.
Love it. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your day. I really appreciate it. It's been super fun to connect with you and hear all the things. And like I said, please share social, website, anything so that our listeners can, you know, follow you, get to know you a little bit better, read up on more of the things, and hopefully, you know, attend some of your cool, you know, workshops or conferences down the road.
Yeah. So best way to get a hold of me is via social media. I do post every morning on Facebook and Instagram. On Instagram, it's just coach_Colene, and it's Colene. Mm-hmm. And then on Facebook, it's just Coach Colene. And I post there every morning. I share lots of information there about upcoming events and workshops and challenges and things that I do. You can get on the pep talk list if you just go to Instagram and click on the link in bio. All of that is on that link as well. You can buy my book, Monday Morning Pep Talks, off of Amazon. I think it's pretty great. And it's super short read.
It is, yes.
Every chapter is very short and quick read. So I think of it more like a daily devotional where you just open it up and trust that it's the message that you're supposed to get for the day and think, how can I apply this throughout the day? So those are the best ways to get a hold of me. I'd love to hear from you all on social media. Megan, you're right. The Wednesday posts,
yes.
The random Wednesday thoughts.
Yes.
Truly just something that started in quarantine and people loved it and yes. were just like, oh my gosh, this is hilarious. And so it has kept going and we're like way over a year now.
Yes.
I think it was like a year in June. So they've just been fun things to share a little bit more about me and like things going on in my life and the random husband purchases and all of that.
So. Those are always, they always make me laugh. There's usually something about what you've watched, which I love too, because yes. I'm not big on TV, but I'll, you know, get into a series or, you know, binge watch something. And so it's always nice to have other recommendations. And it is, it's exactly that. It's random things that have happened in yes. a week and it's just fun. So I think it was a great idea and I love that you're keeping it going. So, well, thank you again. Thank you, listeners, for taking time to listen to this podcast. And we will join you next week for another awesome, badass guest. All right, guys. Thanks for listening to another episode of Everyday Badass. And whatever platform you are listening to this podcast on, I would greatly appreciate if you can download, share, like, write a review, and just continue to support us and listen to these podcasts moving forward. Thanks so much.